Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. Well, today I'm connected to Geneva with Daniel LaRose, and Daniel is the founder of the game studio, actually his own game studio called LaRose de Jeu, and I think on his website he says, you're bringing the impossible ideas to life through play. That sounds interesting. And even more interesting, now we have to go back to 1961, when a very famous scientist came up with an equation, and you created a game around a complex science finding and the universe and an adventure and dice. And I really want to learn more, and it's going to be very interesting because, it fits in a bigger picture. We'll get to that. But first of all, welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Thank you, Julian. I'm really happy to be with you. And yeah, it's always the funny part of this kind of story is, as usual, it started with a joke, like yes. All the a little bit complicated stuff. You already introduced the Drake equation, and
wow.
Basically,
yes.
We went with some friends, uh-huh. And one of them said, "Yeah, we really want to do something special for the science fair of mm-hmm. the year 25. So yes. We need to." Create something really attractive, really nice, really new to mm-hmm. make people get in astronomy, astrobiology, and just mm-hmm. make them look up, basically. And so we just say, hey, we can do a game with dice. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, why dice? Mm-hmm. Just because it's totally random. And that's yes. part of the joke, is mm-hmm. when you set equation, people are afraid to just go yes. to want to run away, like, okay, that's math. Math is
that's
like,
math.
Really scary.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when you throw a dice, it's not math. In fact, yeah, obviously it's math because there are statistics, but mm-hmm. you don't feel like math. It's just like throwing dice and betting and bluffing and whatever. Mm-hmm. So we try to find the best way to make this concept of math, which is really scary, mm-hmm. being totally normal and like accessible, and dice yes. was the most common and basic object we think about.
Okay, that's one. Well, I have to say, and we have some time to unpack everything. That's one part, and the other part is then extraterrestrial civilizations.
Yeah,
Milky Way. Okay, so let me start with, and we got half of the story already. So let me start with. One traditional question, and then the second part of making math accessible, and then the game and how it unfolded. So what should our listeners, before you share the second half of the story, what should our listeners know about you, and how do you pitch Drake's Dice to someone who's afraid of math?
So to the pitching point, I will start with that mm-hmm. Because
yes,
it's the easiest for me. It's like, do you like games? A lot of people say yes. Some say mm-hmm. no. If they say no, I say probably just because you didn't find the game who fits you. Because mm-hmm. when we speak about games, there's so many different types of games. Like yes. if you like chess and somebody don't like chess, mm-hmm. and but the other people can like the, I don't know, pirate dice or like spies word. I don't know if, I'm not sure it's a good name in English, but mm-hmm. like when you play with words or Mysterium, yes. Dixit, whatever, and mm-hmm. all that are games, but
absolutely.
They touch different audiences. And mm-hmm. so when people say, I don't like games, say, okay, probably you can just, what did you like when you do like hobbies? And people like, I like to creating. I say, okay, so you can go on games when you have to build stuff. I like competition. So, okay, you can go on tactical games and so on. So first thing is like aiming the game you like.
Yes.
And the second thing is when people say, okay, it's like, it's really scary. I say like, do you find it scary to throw dice? Obviously not. So you can play the game.
Yes.
And I try to make a comparison with games that people know. So for the previous game, I spoke about chess, which is a little bit scary, but mm-hmm. less than like speaking about quantum physics. And yes. for this one, I say like, it's just throwing dice, so it's not scary. Mm-hmm. And if people are really, really afraid, I say, when we've done the playtest, our younger player was 4.5 years old. Mm-hmm. So if he was was able to get the basic concept, I'm pretty sure that everybody can reach it. Absolutely. When you're older than 4.5 years old.
Wonderful, wonderful. And lots of mentions that you made. I will link all the games in the show notes, right? And then we can also look at your quantum physics game, and then also Dixit and all the others that you mentioned. Wonderful, wonderful. So what else?
So, I always try to skip the question about myself because I'm not thinking it's the most interesting part, but quickly wrap up. So when I have to introduce myself, I said that first thing, I'm owned by 4 cats. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty fond of them, and they look like they're fond of me, so okay. And I studied physics long time ago, and one of the first things I realized is physicists, and at some point, scientists are not really good to speak and to share. And there's this part of science that people don't know really well, which is outreach. The main problem of outreach, it is doesn't really reach out of the science-attracted people. So it's like going in a circle. And I try to find different way to mm-hmm. make science accessible to people who are afraid of. So basically, what's maybe interesting about me is I started to explain stuff. It's maybe science, but also history, language, whatever, to people when I was 12 years old. Not because I was smarter or whatever. It's just because I like play game. Yes. And I create game with random stuff. And when I saw a concept I didn't get, I tried to create a game. And it worked well with my friends. When I was at school, I was the one creating game about math, theory, whatever. And the people in my classroom like, hey, we can play together. And they get it. And the teacher were really happy.
Got you. Yes. And it's a wonderful way to, this is the Serious Games podcast, right? Not only to use the game mechanics and, the setup of a game, but also have learning mechanics in there, right? So that you do get in contact every now and then with a new concept, with a maybe scary, complicated topic, and then make it accessible. Wonderful. So when did the extraterrestrial idea come in there?
It was a bad joke. It was in the air, in the space. So since a long time. But the thing is, really, the problem is I'm working on like 10 different games. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I have to make choice. And this friend coming to us, like, okay, we need a game about astronomy for September 25. We say, okay, just let's start it. Because I'm working with Alisa Pott, which is a planetology student. Mm-hmm. And she's not just a student. She's also a magician. So her background is quite impressive, but I suggest to invite her another time.
Yes, I will.
As a young student, she's really, for me, somebody which inspired me. Mm-hmm. She just won, like, less than 1 month ago, the FameLab Switzerland First Step Concept. Basically, FameLab is a championship.
Contest?
Context. Yes. Contest, sorry. Wow, it was complicated. Contest. Wow. Not context. Contest. About speaking about science. And she basically pitched the Drake Dice equation and so on, but not just through a game, through a magic show. So so she creates real world, and you dive in the world being tracked by magic, and the magic explain the universe of the science, which is forming one of the oldest and best connection existing in the world, because a lot of magicians were scientists, basically.
Wonderful.
But
wonderful.
So Alisa came to me, and we were speaking about games. And when the other friend come and say, okay, we need something, we say, okay, so now let's go on the Drake Equation because he's speaking about life, and there's more and more people. Everybody saw someday some alien movie when the alien come and want to kill humanity and so on. But the thing is, when you sit backwards, if you are an alien and the first thing you get from humankind is, hey, they will just fight us and want to kill us, even if we come in peace, you don't really want to get involved.
Yes.
And all those things are answered to real science question. One of the oldest is the Fermi paradox, which is, if there is life in space, why are we alone? And some of those questions, some of the answers of these questions are into the Drake equation.
Gotcha.
Basically, the Drake equation said, what do you need to get in touch with some extraterrestrial intelligence? First things, okay, you will become a real hardcore astrophysicist for 2 seconds. So I'm pretty sure you're ready for that, Julian.
Yeah,
what is the first thing you need to get life in universe? It's really under your nose, and think the easiest thing as possible.
Water?
Easier than that. Easiest.
Easier than that. An organism?
Matters.
There you go.
Basically, for what we know, just actually, is if there's no matters, there's no life.
Yes.
So basically, you need a certain amount of matters, because it's maybe possible to imagine there's organism living in space with not a lot of connection between atoms. But for what we know, having atoms really connected together to create something living, it's not so crazy. So when you have a fair amount of matter, is a planet. So that's why I said it's really like under your nose. It's like literally, because you need planets. And so congrats, you find one of the seven parameter of the Drake equation.
Okay.
So you're a great physicist.
Wonderful.
And the things are, planets are orbiting in space around. It's a question.
Stars.
Stars. Sun. Perfect.
Yes.
So you have the second parameter. So you're really, you have already debunked one third of the equation. So as you see, it's really complicated. So, and there's at least five other parameter. One we didn't take in the game because it's a stable parameter. It's new star born each year.
Okay.
And as the other parameter, the two parameters we speak about is, I will not say easy, but we can have insights with math, physics, our old telescopes, our technology. We can have insights. But after, there's the four other parameters are totally unsure. The other parameter are the probability for a planet to develop life.
Okay.
We don't know. To develop intelligent life, we still don't know. To develop intelligent life who is able to communicate, or even not intelligent, but life who is able to communicate through space, because we have to see, to reach out, obviously. And the length life of the civilization, or this extraterrestrial life.
Okay, yes.
Because if that happens during, I don't know, during 100 years, depending of the time to travel, the signal travel between, will not be enough. When we'll have the signal back, there will be already dead, or will be already dead. So, and if you look at that, it's like just logic. It's not hardcore science. And that's one thing we're really proud of, because we just, when you explain that to kids, it's like, say, yeah, that's just logical. And often adults are really more afraid than kids, because it's just like, yeah, just to find life, you need life. Yay.
So explaining that in a couple of minutes is one thing, but then gamifying it, or making a game with this content, how did that work? Or can you even walk us through the gameplay, and then we learn together with you as you explain it what happens and how players are invited to the flow, and what they memorize and experience.
With pleasure. So you have to know that I cheat a little bit with the serious game design traditional tactics. I've met a lot of serious game designers who's like, the fun is not the most important part. To be honest, I think that's a little bit sad, but I understand where it's come from and so on. Sure. And so it's we can argue about it, but it's not the point. So for me, which is important, is if people don't enjoy the game, they will not get involved. And if they don't get involved, obviously, they will not remember. So because those games are not games, we will do some animation around. But another thing you have to know is those games are board games. And we sell them through the science place like CERN, university, whatever you want. One of the things is to get money for the science. But the thing is, people can buy the game and have to play by themselves. So if the, the game mechanics are not good enough, they will play once, twice, and after forget the game in on the shelter, and it will be a total failure. So each game I'm creating have three levels, and the first level is quite easy because I want people have easy onboarding and say, okay, I understand the game mechanics, especially if the theme are scary.
Yes.
Because if the onboarding is hard, they will just never get in. So first things. Second things is I want it to have a long length life. I want people play it again and again and again, not because they are interested about astrobiology, quantum physics, neuroscience, whatever, but because they are interested in the game. So that's super important to have game which is really fun, enjoyable. And as we spoke before, there's different type of games. So it's totally okay if you, it's not your type of game, but that's why it's super important to be clear. This is this kind of game. So Drake Dice, game about luck and statistics. And we choose this mechanics because, just taking the example of Hop, Hop is an abstract strategy game like chess. When you say chess, people are afraid because it's for smart people. And we want to break that. In fact, we needed to have something without any randomness with Hop because speaking about quantum physics, for many people, it's random. It's not. It's statistic, it's probability, but it's not random. And so the game of the choice of the game mechanics are always science related.
Okay.
With Drake Dice, we wanted to make people consider that it's not because in an equation is officially math. This is known, sure, and hard. So playing with this equation, which is totally, we don't have any answer. Some specialists will tell you, for sure, there's plenty of life everywhere at this time of the universe and at reachable distance, which is a bet. And some other will tell you, there's not. And it's not because no life in universe, but just like other galaxy and we'll never reach them.
Gotcha. Yes.
So they are bets. And going to this dice throwing basics make that really appealing and nice for normal people.
Okay. Gotcha. And Al, you also, you know, just said something on the side, but this enjoyment and fun, right? And should a game be fun? Now, I guess we all agree that you can learn something even if it's not fun.
Totally.
Right? But as you just explained, you know, the game can be fun. But even a tricky, hard, challenging task or game in that sense that you play for, you know, other reasons than fun, like, you know, finishing up or just getting through it, winning against the game, maybe with some you know, colleague, partner, friend, that can also be enjoyable, even if you might not say afterwards, that was a lot of fun, right? So, you know, it's not a thin line, but again, enjoyment is more than fun. And fun can be an important part, and you deliberately decided that, yes, it must be, especially when we onboard players, right? So that they are not only onboarded, but drawn into this idea of, wow, I can master it, right? I can do it. I can get somewhere.
The main difference is when you do a workshop in the serious game context with a facilitator, agile game, so on, you are in the work space. Yes. And you are drawn here by external force, which is the you have to be there. Mm-hmm. And I deliberately choose to skip that part. So I didn't have the player directly. I have to make them come because this board game are accessible freely, so yes. Freely, not for free, but so like accessible in the shop or whatever. So people have to on board by themselves, and yes. That's where this mechanics of fun is really important. Mm. Is because I also want those games to spread by themselves.
Absolutely, yes.
And if you want in the board game world, if you want a game to spread, it's because you have player who say to other player, "Hey, I really like the mechanics." So theme is the first door. Like, okay, Hop was first things reaching the physicist and people who have interest about quantum physics. But after, now it's getting further because people say, "I really like the mechanics and I want to play it more with friends and so on."
Absolutely. And I'll link that, right? It's a different game. Maybe we can do an episode on that too. But I will definitely make sure it's in the show notes so that our listeners can look it up, right? So again, onboarding, number one, level one, easy onboarding. You going to walk us through do you want to introduce the materials? Just give us a little bit of a feeling of what it's like to be onboarded to Drake's Dice.
Okay, so basically, when you open the box of Drake Dice, first thing you see, it's a little board with holes inside and with little cubes. So it's really So you have the camera. So
I have the camera, and we'll put some pictures in the show notes too. Pictures in the podcast too.
Yeah. So you can choose that. Obviously, this is just my prototype, so it's not really it's not because the final is in printing now. And in fact, it's that. So basically, you have the board. The board have six symbols, which has the six parameter of the equation we spoke before, stars, planets, and so on.
Yes.
And the first level is really easy. You have to upgrade your tools to detect those parameter. So in terms of ups, in terms of the, you're just moving your cube, you're moving your cubes further because you become higher level. And at some point, we will not just try to upgrade your tools, but you try to detect life.
Okay.
This is the first thing you see. So basically, it's interesting because you those cubes and those holes make people want to play. It may look silly, but we saw it. People like moving stuff.
Yes.
And the second things you get first are the dice. There's obviously eight dice with strange symbols, which are the parameters, like a little alien heads to say that that's the intelligence life or stars or whatever. And basically, each player take his board in front of him, have a screen to protect, so because we all impersonate a really well-known and confident and skilled researcher about life to find life in the universe. And your goal is to become the Nobel Prize. I like the cooperative games, but this one is a little critic about science, because science is always like, yeah, we're all friends, but there's a prize, so I will win the prize and I will push you away. So it's not always the fun part of science.
Okay,
so we work all together on the same parameter, because the dice represents all the tools we have actually to, I will say speak, but just to listen more to universe. So there's like the James Webb telescope, the Hubble telescope, the Very Large telescope, and all that. And the thing is, there is no researcher who have one just for himself. It's cost too much. Just
okay,
you have,
yes, got you.
Mm-hmm. Imagine the how much is it's cost to have one telescope,
yes,
about 100 meter wide. Mm-hmm. And you don't need one, you need three of them to make interferences. So
yes,
that's crazy stuff. It's government level and national level and international level stuff. So when you throw the dice, you gather the data through all those instruments.
Okay.
So basically, as a researcher and a player, you choose two focuses. So two parameter were the one you are studying this year. So I don't know, you, Julian, you will be focused on the detecting more stars and detecting more exoplanets.
Okay,
that's your focus for this turning year. I'm not aware of what you are studying because I'm another researcher. I have my group. So I'm hidden behind my screen and I choose, I don't know, also the exoplanets, but also the how to detect life on planets. So we have different parameter, but in science, we have to work together. So let's imagine that I'm the first player. I will throw the dice.
Yes.
It gives some results. So more or less exoplanets, stars, life symbols, whatever.
Okay, and we get to the dice in a second because it's not with numbers, right?
Yeah, this is the sixth parameter. So stars, exoplanets, life, sentient life, capacity of communication, and length life. So little symbol. And I hope they will please the player because a lot of people would test the game told us that they are beautiful. So little details, but for me important to make the material attractive. And so when I throw the dice, it's the parameter, the data I've gathered. But in science, I have to be peer review.
Okay.
So you're my peer reviewer because you're the next player. So you have two choices. Or you accept my data or you reject my data. Let's say that really, you're really lucky on the eight dice. You have four stars and four exoplanets. That never happens. But let's say that happens. So you say for you, it's super good because you are focusing on those two symbols and only your two symbols. So you will accept them.
Yes.
And basically upgrade your tool detection until those fourth level because you have four symbols on the dice, so you add four level. So now your tools are able to detect, understand, explain whatever a fourth level signal about exoplanet, star, whatever. If you accept, it's not just you gather data. I will gather data and everybody will gather data, but the data who are on the dice at this moment. So let's imagine that Alisa is playing with us and she's totally not focusing those two parameter. So she's totally not on the exoplanets and stars. She will get zero upgrade because the data will not be helpful for her, which is as it's work in real life. And so you play, you make turn around like that. And if you don't like, so let's imagine that when I throw the dice, there's no stars and exoplanets, we'll say I don't like it. So you can throw the dice back. But if you throw the dice, it will become your research, no more mine. So it will be Alisa who have to peer review.
And decide and peer review mine. Yeah.
And so, and so you turn and this mechanics of you're the one who throw the dice and you can choose to launch, to throw everything of or just few of them. But this is the other will choose. So you have also to guess what the other player are looking for and say, okay, if I let you, I don't know, two parameters, it will be enough for you to accept that, but I will get more and so on. So
So help me out, Daniel. I understand that I am dependent of the next player. I get to choose if I accept or reject the data that the player before me in his round has found, so to speak. Question: you said we don't know our parameters, our focuses, but are we allowed to share them, or will we have an advantage if we share them? Or is it more that I will try to lure you in and say, well, please keep it because I also have the exoplanets, or I have intelligence and I really want to work with that data together with you?
The both strategy are going well. In fact, it's the thing is, you can do whatever you want, because some player, if you're too collaborative, people will go in front of you easier. Mm-hmm. But if you're too luring, you will disadvantage yourself. One way, and the first level, basically, you're quite open, because the first level is just like to get on board. But with the second level and the third level, you become more tricky. So your question was the perfect question to go to next step. On the second level, we had one new possibility.
Okay.
On the board, I show you the six parameter, who are the six parameter on the dice.
Yes.
And there's also, as you can see, other possibility. And those possibility are the second and the third level, and the winning condition. So because I explained you how to play the first level and then how to win. So probably go back to that. And before going to the winning condition, the second level, we allow you to make discovery. Discovery are cards like those one. I will show you some of them. So
And I'll put some in the picture of the podcast, right, into the show notes, so that you can now, if you're listening, you can also look at your podcast player and see the cards.
All those cards are real science cards, like the one I show you. Is the name is ALH84001, which is a quite strange name. But the funny thing is, even if you never heard about that, you probably heard about Bill Clinton. Probably. And Bill Clinton was the president when this meteorite struck the Earth. And some scientists say it's look really, really, really like life. So as you can see, the little how it's like if there's worms or whatever. And so scientists, well, maybe it's life. The problem is, when you say to somebody, which is, we want to attract the media attention. If you say maybe, he will hear, we have found life. So Bill Clinton made a huge announcement like, USA find life. And was not. So it had a huge strike back, because it just totally was not credible more to this kind of announcement.
Okay,
and we try to have in the game those kind of events, but you can use that to change the game. Like this card, if I have this card, I've discovered the ALH84001. You don't need to remember the name, and says not the problem.
I'll put the link in the show notes and everyone can look it up.
So the thing is, just there's nice pictures, story, and the first thing you get is the effect. As you can see, there's a little symbol on the top. All the card with the symbol have the same effect, and the effect is written here on the just under the picture. And if you have this discovery, you can use whenever you want and just make the effect. And the effect on this picture is you stop the round.
Okay,
so let's imagine that the when I threw the dice, the dice have super good result for me. And I know that you will not approve it, because we are totally not looking for the same thing. I can use this card, say, no, this is finished. So this is accepted. So you don't have the choice. It's like that, because you have made an announcement telling that you find life, but what you say is crap. So you're not credible. It's up there. And
you play
with all those real science story. And so you don't need to know the science story, but it's always more interesting if you know a little bit of them, to just change the game. And it's not just science story. It's also initiative. One I really like, I think the picture is really great. I don't know if you saw. So
yes,
this one is Sapphire Disc. okay. where a group of French people wrote all the history and all the cultural, artistic, science background of human.
Yes.
And they want to create a museum on the moon to protect the history of humankind. If something happens on the moon, it will be accessible for eternity. Because it's protected of meteorite, because it's protected by Earth and so on. And this group are part of the Artemis mission, who are now actually in life. So you have a lot of story like that. Obviously, there are jokes. I told you about my cat. So you probably guess, and you guess well, there is a cat in the story.
Yes, there must be. The only question is if it's Neri or Riot or someone else.
it's Neri. so you get it. So this is the card. And it's a joke. Because the Neko virus, Neko is cat in Japanese, and in some real specific board game, which name is Twilight Imperium, they've created the Necro virus, which is the virus who eats people to death and so on.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And also with the space cat, the Nyan cat on the internet. So we just mixed all the jokes on internet, our board games together, and we created cards which speak about cats because it's mandatory for my games. There's always cat.
Course. Cat content works not only on the internet. okay, so I was wondering when I was listening to you. So, well, maybe at one point I will know. But to help me out, those focuses, those parameters that I'm trying to find, I change them every round. Yep. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because I want to upgrade different. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Each time it's accepted.
Okay.
You change or stay, but sometimes it's not really working.
Depending on what I want to upgrade, depending on what I feel, what I sense the next round would be like. Okay, Katya. And those cards, give me some extra points, extra upgrades.
And you can they help you to do nasty things.
Yes.
Like the Neko virus may allow you to swap your level in one tools to another player. Let's say that I'm level 5 in Length Life. And you saw that because you see when I say yes, I accept or not, or you have insights. So you say, okay, I bet that you have more of this parameter than me, so we'll exchange. And if you have 0, I will get 0 and you will get 5.
Yes. Wonderful.
It can be nasty.
Okay, so that's level 2, right?
It's
there's one more,
two.
You said, no?
And the level 3, it's allow you to stop the game instead of the other player whenever you, not whenever you want, at some point, and also get free cards. So basically, to get cards, it's a little bit tricky. Sorry, I have the sun behind me, so I never was so bright.
Well, you have to know Al is recording, actually sitting outside, and it's a very early morning recording, so the sun is just in his back. Great.
So, how did you do to get cards? Basically, and the second level, you have to wait that people accept. So there's always this bluff and trying to find what the other will want and so on. You will have, as I told you, you can check two boxes, choose two symbols. When you go to have the cards, you will lose one of your box because you will have to check that you are looking for discovery. And you have only one box to check in the symbols. So you have half of the feedback you can have normally because you're totally focusing to find something really special. So in terms of games, let's say that I'm focusing on stars. When the you accept the results and there is 3 stars on the dice, I say, okay, I'm looking for discovery on stars. I will not say on stars, but I'm looking for discovery. And so with the result of the dice, I can draw one card. How do you know you can draw a card? For each pair of dice with the same symbol, you draw a card. So if there was four stars, I can draw two cards. Six stars, three cards, and so on. And that gives you a real hint, about what the other are looking for. So if you made a really good research and you saw me picking three cards, you obviously know that I was looking on this focus. Can swap the the focus I just had with me with card. So if you make a lot of research, that's great because you have a lot of cards and you have a lot of possibility, but that give also the other a lot of information of what you are doing, and it's a frail. And one of the first game when we were trying testing this mechanics, Alisa was really not nice with me because I didn't think about that in this way, and she said, okay, you just made a lot of discovery, but I take all your level, and I was a little bit sad, and she won.
Okay, got you. So at the beginning, you can hide it a little bit, you know, because you're just about to roll the die. But then at one point, it you cannot hide it anymore. And again, you will also mature. By the way, those upgrades, those levels, these are visible to everyone at every time? Okay, so these are hidden, right? Which means... I'm doing my research. I'm collecting the cards. I'm accepting or rejecting data from the player before me. But then I need to be observing what the player is taking in and what they're rejecting so that I can get somewhat of a feeling or idea of where they are right now, right? Okay, got you.
And that's how it works in a real research group, because you know that some people on the side of the world are looking something close, but they also want the novel, so they won't tell you everything, but yes, but no, but so,
Okay, so wonderful. And how long does a round, and then how long does the whole game last?
The first game, it's may last, I don't know, 15 minutes, because you just have to get the rules. Once you get the rules, the first level is 5 minutes because it's really easy. The second level is more interesting, can go up to the to 15 minutes. Okay. And the third level, it's maybe accelerating the game. So funnily, the third level is often shorter than the second level because it's more reactive.
Got you.
Because so to get back to the third level, so the second level, you can get cards and you will pick more or less data. On the third level, the thing is when you play 2, 3, 4 players, it's quite quick, but we wanted to make a game we can play up to 5, maybe 6, but we'll say 5 player. And when you have to wait that 4 other person throw the dice before you can do something, it's long. So we introduce this third level when where you have to observe the dice, and not just at your turn. As you see on the card, it's written 1, 5, 2, 4, 3, 3. It's the repartition of the dice, of the symbol of the dice. Okay. Let's say that you pick the 2, 4. We call that a constellation. So you pick the 2, 4 constellation, and you're still looking for the stars. So at any moment, if there is 2 and 4 topics, symbols, where the same 4 symbol and the 2 same 4 symbol on the dice.
Okay.
Whatever which symbol it is, you can say stop. I've discovered something. So even if you're your turn to accept, I can stop. What is the bonus to do that? I will get a free card, which is great. Okay. But also, it's the same thing that the discovery. I've only one focus left. So I've 1 in 6 chance to have something which is interesting. But if I block I end the turn with that, more than just this discard, I can steal a symbol. So basically, I can say, there's 4 symbol war, I don't know, let's say there are stars. I'm looking for stars. The enforceable was stars. I will be the only one who can consider those four symbols. So I will use those four dice, and all the other player will play only with the four dice left.
Left.
Okay. So you slow the gathering of data for the other player, and you get quicker cards.
And you take it off.
So that's all you.
Okay, so this, just to recap, so it's like a, in layman terms for me, it's like a surprise discovery, right? So I see two and four, I see two symbols, one showing two times and one showing four times, right?
Exactly.
And then I have to say, stop, I made a discovery. Now I take the symbol that I need at that point, right? So I seal it, and the player before me continues his turn with only
it's finished.
Finished?
The turn is finished.
Oh, wow, okay.
And for everybody can gather data, but only with four dice. So it's really less interesting. You have only half of the data. Yes. So, and you can also steal the dice who are not of any interest for you. Like, let's say that the symbol, you have four exoplanets and only two stars.
Yes.
It's not interesting to steal the two stars. You will steal the four exoplanets, because even if you don't use them because you don't have the checked this symbol,
got you.
You just blocked the symbol for the other. So it's going to be a little bit nasty.
Okay, got you. So that's the third and final round. Now, how do I win? So eventually I will be upgraded on all of my focuses, on all parameters, yes?
Yep.
And what happens then? What's the finale? Oh, the Nobel Prize.
The things which is interesting is you don't need to reach all the top level to win. It's also a bet. Because this mechanics I told you about, trying to observe the dice and be the first one to say stop, because we're two to having this two and four constellation choice, it will be only the first one who say stop who will have the reward. So for the winning, it's the same. At this point, I will check those box who are called SETI.
Okay.
There's two box because there's two choice, and when you are looking for life, you can't upgrade you are putting everything of yourself in the game.
Yes.
So in the research. So at this point, you need to have at least eight level of different parameter.
Okay.
Because there's eight dice, and you have to have at least the same number, and it's better if more number of level of the parameter on your card and on the dice.
Okay.
If I said that in a more comprehensive way, let's say that you have three in all the parameter, like in stars, in life, in sentient life, and so on. If when it's not matters if I throw the dice, you throw the dice, at some point, if there is less than three or less time the same symbol on the dice, I can say SETI and I win.
Okay.
So basically, it's even if you're late in the game, like you have only two symbols everywhere, you can still say, okay, I will try to get lucky, and I know that the other are better than me, but I will go quicker on the research to find life, and maybe I will win. And in fact, this balance between having the best equipment of the world and trying to really find the life, which is a real balance when you do science. You always have to balance between the materials, the state of research, and trying to find something. It's all the spice of the game, because sometime when we've done more than we've played this game with more than 400 playtester, so it's quite a lot.
Yes.
And at the beginning, people play it like in a stressed way. They want to have 5, 6, 7 upgrades in each parameter, which is too much, because you have only eight dice. So as long that each dice have the is coherent with the cross, with the check, with an upgrade on your card, it's okay. So you can win, if you're really lucky, you can win with only 8 upgrades. It's enough.
Yes. And so, and tell me, just to recap. So I, as an individual researcher, player, I decide when I start looking for life, right? Which means my fellow players, they might still be going for the upgrade and collecting the die in the right, you know, icon. But I can already put all in, put my guess down on the Sethi field, and then roll the dice against that, right?
Totally.
Okay.
And that which is the best part, because you even if you're not the if you've not the best tools, you can just outsmart everybody.
Gotcha. Wow. So I understand total length might be somewhere around half an hour to do it all. Is that correct?
So it's if you want to go through each level, in fact, it depends really the habits, the experience of the player. When I play with board game addicts, they go directly to the third level and it's finished in like 10 minutes. And when I play with people who are not used to board games, it can last to go through everything. It can take like 1 hour, but you don't, you're not forced to, to do everything. You can play the first level, wait a little bit, go to second level and so on. And this, those level are steps. And because you can play it at your speed, at your rate, it's easy to get, if you are interested, you will just go to your, at your rate, your speed.
Yes. And you also mentioned the cards, right? That might be interesting and trigger an interesting either discussion or maybe even research, right? So, how many different cards are there?
Actually, we have 60 cards. Okay, it will be a little bit more. And because we are still in speaking with some partner, because one card is still pending, by example, because I will not give the name, but it's a project related to NASA. And we want to do everything square and fair. So we ask all the rights, everything, the collaboration. If you go to, on the website, there's a page which is science and rules. And if you go down to the page, you will see all the collaboration we have. Because for us as scientists, it's really super important to make everything clear. So if some people see a card, they have... I was forgetting one thing. So we spoke about the game design, but in the games, you have the rule book and you have an info book. This is a book which is explaining all the science content a bit more virtually, trustfully, to just give feedback and hints. Like you don't have just 2 sentences on the cards, but you can learn a little bit more. And if you're really triggered and interested, you just go on the website and click on the partnership and you will reach the ESA, so European Special Agency, or any other people who worked with us. And you go directly on the research website. So it's a super nice way to basically learn. And you don't need to do it. It just if one cards trigger any interest, you will have it.
And that's it. You know, using it as a serious game, maybe for a specific, you know, learning intent. That might be exactly what you did. The conversation that you might want to start, right? Or the research that you want to start. And I can totally envision this being a fun way of introducing that topic, and then you know deepening again depending on the context and the learning intent of that session, right? Wow. So, you don't need to know anything, right, about the science world or the
Drake's
equation. Okay. And what is the
thing is, there's a plenty of science game, and if I create mine, it's because I'm not happy with what I see. It's because a lot of science, official science game, are or science or games, but not both. I saw a lot of games where we contain really real science, but where the game mechanics are not existing. Like this is a quiz. You take cards and say, okay, do you know what is Kaspar? Yeah, I know. I want a point. And where's the fun and where's the attraction? That is like it's a quiz. So it's basically it's an exam. It's in an exam in disguise. And the other end, I saw so many games which is like related to quantum or whatever. And when you dig a little bit, it's a cat and the cat appears, disappear. What is the connection with quantums? So the goal is really to make the bridge between them. And I think it's stupid to create a game asking you to know already the field if I want to explain you the field. So no, it's really for people, for everybody, and those those three level allow to have people who don't know anything about the astronomy or the field of the game, and to speak with experts, because at some point the expert will be super happy. We saw that with Drake Dice and Hop and so on. That when some experts, we've made some playtests with the University of Geneva with some research group, and they had a lot of fun, just like, okay, I know these things. And at some point, they don't know all the cards. So even for experts, they will learn something. And if you have an expert and some beginner, the expert will have the space to explain all that.
Absolutely. Yes, I just when you mentioned, you know, I remember not sure if there's still some trace. I'll try to find it, but I still remember when we facilitated a workshop at CERN at the Open Door or the Neighborhood Day, and you know, we had Lego series play back in the days that were what we used, but then we deliberately mixed physicists and the neighbors at a table, and you know, gave them some questions to build and explain, and it just sparked such a wonderful discussion and conversation that might have not happened, you know, if you just stand in line in the supermarket behind a neighbor or physicist. Question for you. How do you wrap it up? Okay. If you facilitate it, or how would you encourage, the game master, to wrap it up? Okay. So at one point, yes, someone won, found life. And what is a nice way to reflect upon what you've just experienced, or the insights that you had or the ideas that you had, so that you can now comfortably say, all right, I grasp how not only science, you know, could work, but also about the Drake's equation, but then maybe also, you know, what struggle or decisions I have to go through when I, you know, invest my life. If I give my life to do research and not being sure if it will be taken from me, or if not be sure to if I will if this will lead to something, right? What other ways of wrapping it up do you recommend?
For the facilitation, what we do is we have so on Drake Dice, it's not already finished because we have to we are still doing the exercise, especially at school, but not just at school. What you have to know is Elisa will present Drake Dice and the workshop to plenty of conferences. So obviously, Serious Play, when we will have the pleasure to meet again.
Yes.
But not just that. Also, ISAGA, which is one of the biggest academic gathering about games, and if you want to come one day, I really encourage you to come because it's really great. But also, I didn't show you everything, all the cards, because it's so long. But little story inside, to have to be when we create a game about science, we really want to be sure that it's real science side. So we go to real experts and ask them to give us feedback or contents. And we were super lucky. In fact, we weren't super lucky. Alisa made an incredible job. She just go to reach the biggest authority of the world in this field of science. She start with the European Astrobiology Institute, which back us a lot and review everything. So every dot in this game was reviewed by top scientists. And also she go to have the feedback of the COSPAR, Committee for Space Research. Basically, they are kind of international union to speak about space research with really great scientists. And I'm honored to have met some of them who are incredible. So I just met a few of them. And Alisa is invited to go to this conferences, this annual meeting of the COSPAR in Florence to make people play Drake Dice. So make experts play Drake Dice, make teacher play Drake Dice, but also to make a magic show about Drake Dice and to explain the story of Drake Equation and of our universe through magic. So to go back to your question, when we create a game, we have a workshop online, which is accessible to every teacher, whatever. They need officially, obviously, the material, but outside of that, it's accessible. And you have a walkthrough. To the Drake Dice things, we are developing a special walkthrough for not just school, but common places. And a little hint, I'm also working with Cédric and Yann, you know really well, to create a workshop based on Hop for serious gaming in enterprises.
Okay.
So there's a workshop not just based on management, but also on quantum physics to explain management and quantum physics at the same time, which is quite great. So when you facilitate this kind of game, you have different way. What I suggest and what we do now with Drake Dice, but it may change in the future, is we make people play. We start, I always start with a question like, okay, do you think there's alien? Do you think there's extraterrestrial life? And just make people think and speak to get involved. Because with this kind of question, everybody have an opinion. Everybody say, yeah, I think, I think there's something or not and blah, blah. And it's really the kicker. It's the moment when I try to have the feedback of everybody and try to be as welcoming as possible. I try to never say no. I say, okay, that's an interesting point of view. Why? And so on, so on. And start the discussion before the game.
Yes.
And when people play, so when they ask me, okay, what is the answer? I say, I don't know. We'll play. You will see, you will get your answer by playing. And we play first, second, maybe third level. Often people get excited but by the game, because when you play, if you get involved a little bit, it will create emotions.
Wonderful.
And when we reach the third level or reach a time limit, I say, okay, how do you feel? And people say, oh, I'm excited, it's great, and it's steal my data, or this thing was really nice, or I'm super happy I've done that. And just by having the feedback on the game itself, you have feedback on the emotion, and you can relate it really easily on research, because after you say, it's the same thing in research. You may have this kind of, hey, I find something. No, it was a dude. I will win. Oh, no, something happens. It's made a fake meteorite or whatever. And also after this more emotional and investing part in making the comparison, I try to tackle few little points. There is few cards I didn't show you. One which is really important for me is the card named A Pale Blue Dot.
Okay, pale blue dot.
I don't know if it's ring a bell for you or not at all.
Not at all.
Okay. If I tell Carl, if I name Carl Sagan, did it ring a bell or not?
Nope.
Okay, Carl Sagan is basically the guys who made space attractive during '70s. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first outreach director of NASA who tried to make people interest about space. And he published this really well-known picture from Voyager, which is a pale blue dot. And you see, so I don't know, with the sun, so... like that.
It's
just one little white stripe on the black and blue skies. Yes. And in the little white stripe, just one little dot here. You will for sure not see the dot. The dot is the Earth. And Carl Sagan said, everything you always known, you discover, you experience, you see everything you love, each person you met, all those are existing on this little pale blue dot. We have only one spaceship Earth. And long time before the ecological consideration, it was telling us that, like, we can't waste our planet. We have only one. And that's for me, which is really important with space. Space stars make dream human since the beginning of the human existence. I'm pretty sure that even our monkey ancestors, monkey is not a good word, but I don't have it in English, sorry. We're looking to the star. It's something everywhere on the planet. It's not a question of gender, religion, age, whatever. Everybody experienced that once, at least one time in his life, just looking to star and feel the universe. I don't have other word.
Wow.
And so that's for me one of the points of the game is it's explain us that it doesn't matter if we're alone or not. We have only one Earth. And if you want to maybe one day speak with other species, we have to take care about our spaceship.
Got you. Wow. Daniel, thank you so much. And I'll put that that picture of Carl Sagan and the Earth from, I think, 6 billion kilometers, right? That dot picture. I will put it also not only in the show notes, but also now on the podcast players that support pictures. But what I understand is a serious game, yes. But I like when you say, look, this is a science outreach tool, right? This is a game, a moment that you are creating with that game that will help us to bring players in contact with science. And even if, you know, as you mentioned, there are already experts, right? There's still something in for them, right? Either in that expert bubble or with other fellow players that are getting into the field, right? Or getting interested in the field, or just getting in first contact with the field. Wow. I'm just looking at the time and I'm wondering if I can ask you maybe three more final questions, okay? Before we get into all the other things that are happening around the game. And yes, for sure, I will not only link the website, I will also link a few conferences that you said. I know they're all on the website too, where you can meet Al or Alisa and then where you can play the game or you can have a look at the materials and all that has been created. So three more questions. What's your ultimate facilitation tip for our listeners out there? Doesn't have to be only for the Drake's Dice, right?
It's not only for the Drake Dice. My ultimate facilitation tips is life story and storytelling. I will not make it right now because it will take at least 5 minutes, and I know that we're short on time. But when I facilitated 2 days ago another games and so on, and for me is if you share a part of yourself, if you show that you're involved in the game, people will get involved because they want to share the moment. And I know this is not always the belief of people in facilitation world. You have always to have the step back, feedback from the from the back of the room and so on, which is in one end super great. And I really, when I see experts doing that, I'm really thrilled. But for me, is less my way because at least for the kicker, I need to be involved and to start the dream. This special moment we share when we facilitate, it's a gift, and we have to make it feel as a gift. And to start this gift sharing moment, you have to start by giving. So find a story which is fun, neutral enough, because you don't want to bias people, obviously, but fun and concern you. And doesn't matter if it's make you look you well or stupid or whatever. One story I like to tell when I speak about quantum physics, those doesn't really make me look like a nice person, because it was a social experience, and yeah, it was not nice. But I don't care. The really interesting part is how it has impacted me, the other persons, and after, people can do whatever they want with this story. They can make their own story based on this one. They create, they can, I hope they will experiment, try, leave the story, but, or they can just leave it and don't care about it. But that's the point where I have the best feedback and the best reaction is the moment where people laugh, cry, shout, and say, I rely on that. I understand. I feel something. So yes. Life. To wrap up all that,
yes,
live your workshop and make it shining by life.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. For that tip. Yeah. And in a nutshell, what's the secret sauce of Drake's Dice? What makes it work?
A lot of work.
Yes.
To be honest, I'm not sure there's a secret sauce. Also, we're connected on LinkedIn, so I know you saw my dev diary, and I'm late because my last one have to be published a few days ago, so it will be one of my day's duties. But to make a game, whatever. It doesn't count which type of game it is. It can be a science game, board game, facilitation game. I don't care. For me, the only real secret is playtest. Try it and feedback. You can have the best theory of the world. If it doesn't experiment the theory, experience it, it will not be good. With Drake Dice, we start with this idea of dice to be to have something which is engaging for the main public, which are not players and so on. But the first first experience were so bad. It was failure. And it's important because often when people share something, especially internet, they will say, it's a big success. Everything was great. And it's like success story. It's not. I don't remember created a game or anything which was a success from the beginning. So, okay, maybe I have the answer. The secret sauce is failure. So fail. I think it was Seth Godin who told that. Fail fast, fail soon, fail cheap, fail fast, fail cheap, fail. I don't remember a third one. Fail as soon as possible. And that's the point. Make prototype, try, fail. And if you fail, that's a good sign. Because you won't fail after.
Yeah. Katya. Wow. Thank you so much. And I will dare to ask, is there anything we did not talk about? Anything around Drake's dice that our listeners should know? Look, and I know there's a crowdfunding going on. I'll link that too. We mentioned the conferences. We mentioned all the details. I'll put some pictures on the podcast and in the show notes. Is there anything else that you want to share? Where can we buy it? I mean, when can we buy it? Is there also a way to get hold of an early package of a prototype? Walk us a little bit through when it will be available.
So thank you for this those questions, because I always forgetting stuff. I will just make one other little inside story, because I want to speak about one card, which is the only bad card in the game. When you draw a discovery card, is always good for you, not for the other, but it's good for you. This one is really special. It's the Kessler syndrome. The Kessler syndrome is a real problem we are facing right now on Earth. Is when there's not infinite space in the closed space, and with all the satellites and satellite constellation, to not give names, it's in one end destroying our night sky. So for us, there's the light pollution and so on. But also for the people who do astronomy, when you have a plenty of satellites, you can't detect a so small signal to detect exoplanets and so on. For main people, they will say, I don't care. But where we care is we will be trapped on Earth. If we just continue to send satellite all the time, because there's a limited space. And at some point, just trying to go through will be not possible, because the broken satellite continue to turn and will smash into the rocket. So all the GPS and stuff we have will not get it more. So this is a little point, is we are in the part of the humankind story where we have a really super high tech life, and we can destroy that and go back. And space is one of the weakest place. There's so many mistakes we can do in space. And so that's why we create this card, which is Kessler syndrome. When you make too many discovery, when you throw too many space, too many things in space, everybody will lose, because when you draw this card, it's end. We're trapped on space, and it's finished. So it was not exactly a question, but it's something for me which is really important, because people are always thrilled by technology. And I'm not saying that technology is bad. I'm working science, so obviously I need technology and like technology. It just, everything has consequences. So think about it. And to go back to your question,
it's an interesting point, right? I'm happy to, you know, link more details on the Kessler
syndrome,
and also on ideas how to clean up space, right? And not just pollute it with more technology that at one point will be, you know, out of service or run out of, or run into other issues. Yeah. Absolutely.
And this is really a citizen vote. So you buying this product on this product will change space future. So we're all involved in the space future. And space future is kind of our own future. So, okay. But to go back to your question, where to find Drake's Dice? Actually, you can find it only on the Kickstarter as a pre-order. Obviously, the price is lower on the Kickstarter. We totally know it's quite a high price for a game. It's so basically, without the shipping, it's 32 Swiss francs, so a little bit more than 34 euros. The thing is, the shipping from Switzerland, even if it's France or whatever, it's quite expensive. This is one problem. The other things, which is important to tell, is we prefer to make game who are a little bit more expensive, but mm-hmm. who are local. So we print in Germany.
Yes.
We refuse to print things in China because in terms of ecology or in terms of humanity, is not respectful. So the game will be printed quite today, tomorrow, I don't know. The order has been made.
Yes.
And so people who order it will receive it, we think probably September, maybe for sure before December. And after that, for the each game we have printed and we're not sold, it will be available through university shop. So now we are looking through for University of Geneva, obviously, which is a partner for a lot of games, but also with some university in France, in Germany. The goal is if we have those distributors, it costs less to ship to the for the shipping because it will be already in UA. And the other thing, so there's in fact two other things related to ethics, is why going through university or science place, so probably it will be planetarium, stuff like that, is because when you buy a game in the big shop, I will not tell any name, just to give you a rough idea, the shop will take 50% of the price. So that doesn't let a lot for the printing, the authors, because the goal is also to pay the authors. So it will be in this case, Alisa, and so on. So I prefer to give this money to university and to science place who will do outreach. So our goal is also to create a new network of sellings, of sales to sell, but which is more ethical and more helping science and futures.
Okay.
The other things, if you go right now on the Kickstarter, in fact, it's Make It, which is a local Swiss platform, because we try to be as local as possible.
Yes.
We are also in partnership with a Senegalese from Senegal, I'm not sure in English, from Senegal Association about outreach and education, especially to help women and kids. It's based on Dakar, and people can buy two games, one game for themselves and one game to give to this association.
Okay.
And with if we have more money, I was saying too much money, but there's never too much money because we use it to this kind of thing. If there's more money, we will go to train more people and make the tool, the Drake Dice tool, more accessible.
Okay.
Because this is one last thing. All the games are board games for one reason. You don't need electricity. You don't need update. You have everything in the box. So if you want to make people dream about space in the other side of the world, you can. You don't need anything.
Wow. Wonderful, wonderful. And I will, you know, make sure that, yes, I'll link the We Make It site. I know it's limited, but again, if someone wants to get in contact with you, I'll also put your contact details and at least contact details in the show notes. So please, at any time, if you want to make a difference, and if you want to join the cause, and if you want to make sure that we are aware and get other people aware of the space future and you know, use the Drake's Dice for that, please do get in contact with Daniel and Alisa. Wonderful. Wow. Daniel, thank you so much for all your time and all the details. And I now have a job to do to bring together all the show notes, but it will be lovely to re-listen to our conversation. And with that, the final words, any final words for our listeners from you?
So there's a lot of final words, but the one where we matter more is we're all in charge of our life, our future, our common humankind, so our planets are. So involved, please be involved. I don't care in what, but be involved. Don't let the hope fade. It's we create those games because we want to people regain hope about humanity, about future, about technology, about science, about whatever. I know this period is a hard period for everybody. We'll go on the field in different country and so on. And we see that with all the politics and so on, people are tired, exhausted, afraid, whatever. So don't let it go. That's the main strength of humankind, is we never give up. So don't give up. Do what you do.
Thank you, Elle. And to all our listeners, feels like this is definitely one episode that you just press play again and listen it again from the beginning. Thank you, Elle. And to all our listeners, have a look at the very long show notes and get in touch. Bye-bye.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.